Welcome to episode 17 of the Prospectus podcast series. This podcast is focused on removing barriers to boards. I'm Lottie Wheel, a principal consultant recruiting board members for social purpose organisations and a trustee for Futures Theatre. Prospectus is a B Corp working in partnership to find talented and values-driven leaders and board members to deliver their mission in the UK and internationally. I'm delighted to be joined by Eli Manderson-Evans today to discuss this important governance topic. Eli, could you kick off by introducing yourself?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me, Lottie. As Lottie mentioned, my name's Eli Manderson-Evans. I'm the Senior Social Justice Consultant at 10 Years Time. Just a little bit of a mouthful, that title. And 10 Years Time is a social change organisation and philanthropy advisory organisation. And we really exist to support the funding sector in the UK to, I guess, move to a different place in terms of its ability to be ambitious, to dream big, and to really transform society. We really believe in the power of ambitious philanthropy when done well. When it's not done well, less pleased, but we're here to support people on their journey to be in a different place. And we do that through a number of different initiatives and, I guess, approaches to social change, and I'll skim over them and I'm sure we'll touch back on them within this interview. But we do kind of core learning journeys with funders to support them in their education, to reduce the social distance between where they exist and the communities they exist to serve. Seeing that it's really important for that lived experience to be central in the change that Trust and Foundations resource and are involved in. And then we do kind of more research advocacy functions, which I guess it's in that capacity that I'm talking to you today about my work with researching first-time trustees and kind of board dynamics more widely.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Thank you so much, Eli. And for you, what's your specific interest in this topic?
Yeah, really good question. And I guess being completely honest, as I try to be, I wasn't really that interested in trustees until about a year and a half ago. I'd worked in kind of smaller, more grassroots organizations where the board felt really central to our working as a charity, particularly because of the expertise they held. So often checking in about like financial aspects of our work and things like this, and just legal compliance. But I never quite understood just how strategic the kind of boards can be and are in terms of the direction of an organization. And I guess since joining 10 Years Time and doing a lot of work advising how charitable funding organizations can move closer to the communities they exist to serve and better reflect the needs of those communities, I really quickly saw the power of the board, and actually that was an area that we really needed to support in terms of growing their awareness and understanding about power dynamics that sat there. And I guess in relation to our work as part of the 2027 partnership that seeks to center community expertise in grant making, we do a talent program that gets really amazing people with frontline work experience and working class communities in grant positions, and they do remarkable things on this leadership program and are really changing the landscape, the funding landscape. But we also understood that we can't just focus on the kind of grants officer positions. We have to go to the top as well and ensure that the kind of the lid on everything is also aligned with the change that we need in the sector. So that was a very long answer, but that's kind of the strategic element is what really interested me in trustees in terms of the opportunity for really positive change.
Fantastic. Well, I know you have lots of interest, Eli, so I can understand why it's multifaceted in your response. So thank you. So today we're really focusing on thinking about removing those barriers to boards. So I guess it's helpful maybe for us to think about what some of those barriers are.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to try and condense this to three.
Brilliant.
I'd say the physical barriers of the space where the board meeting takes place. I'd say another huge one is kind of the financial elements and time. And then the third one, maybe the kind of tokenism that is often displayed at board level or is felt at board level around speaking on matters that, well, I guess speaking to more than your lived experience. So I think I'll start with that one. So I think one of the huge barriers that I've seen and heard of, particularly when doing the first-hand research for the report, Missed Expertise, that we released last year, one of the huge barriers that I saw was that there was a huge drive, particularly after last summer and the resurgence of Black Lives Matter. People were thinking a little bit more. There was this rush for diversity that we saw across the board and kind of in all areas of the sector to some extent. But particularly when it came to boards, there was this real rush and people asking myself and my organization, how can we get more Black and Brown people on our boards, particularly? And we were kind of concerned with the urgency sometimes and kind of told people to pause and think about what expertise are you really looking for? What communities are you working with that you need to reflect? Because we were seeing and hearing that people were being brought on kind of as diversity hires and probably a lot more as well, but
of course,
it often felt like that to them. And then they felt when they were on the board, they couldn't speak to matters that didn't pertain to their lived experience. So I can talk a bit more about removing that barrier in a bit, but I think that was a real huge one that really created a sense of being othered for a lot of people that weren't from the kind of majority demographics on the board. So it's about kind of, being boxed into your experience on a board. It's a huge barrier to people feeling confident and able to contribute to the conversation, which they're there for, right? So I guess the second one I said was around the kind of financial aspects. I think often there's a real, because of the people that are on boards often, that are quite solidified in their career or retired, that maybe the financial aspects of being able to be there at a board meeting, having to take annual leave to be there, and the expense processes aren't as important to them. But for some of the people that we believe were being missed at board level, that was really important to enable them to participate from an equal footing. So what we say is, you know, really clear, transparent expense policies for everybody. It really sets a tone rather than you having to be the almost odd one out to ask for these things that you're well within your right. You're working for free, you know? So we just think that really, creating that level playing field for people to engage from is so important and might need to be slightly different for different people. So that awareness. And then I guess the last point in terms of a barrier is the physical space. And I speak about this a lot because I think it's just something that's so easy to remedy. But often board meetings in the most traditional sense, which is often the case in trusts and foundations, the board meeting takes place at a huge, massive board table that feels super domineering and quite regal in a big building. And for people that maybe don't have experience of that, it can be quite intimidating. I often have to brief board and I feel intimidated there. I feel like I'm coming to an interview or I'm getting told off. It's a strange dynamic sometimes, particularly if people are sat on one side, you're on the other, or really spaced out. It doesn't always align itself with collective decision making. So it kind of removes that human element that I think is so important. So those are some of the barriers that came to mind.
Fantastic. Thank you, Eli. Yeah. And I guess with those different elements, I think there's more that we'll kind of unpick as we go through, because on each of those areas, it's kind of, there's a real thoughtfulness, I think, that you're talking about in each of those approaches. And I think there's the piece about upfront and what we do in advance when we're thinking about recruiting trustees. So like making it really clear what those expenses policies are from the advert, from that point, and then being really thoughtful about when you're bringing people into the board. And then there's the retention piece, because fantastic to bring people who've got brilliant, fantastic skills and value to add, but you want to retain those people too. So it's that longevity too, isn't it? Rather than it being a kind of tick box that people are thinking about. Fantastic. So in terms of board diversity, which we're just starting to touch upon there, and it's an area I know that we're both passionate about, and we've had some fantastic discussions already. There's a real discussion at the moment about lived experience. So I think this is becoming kind of more prominent and complex. So could you maybe start by telling us a little bit about what lived experience it means in your words and term?
Yeah, definitely. I guess first, just a little caveat that I'm sure there's, well, I understand there to be many different definitions of lived experience.
Yeah.
I guess for 10 years time in our work, we really see lived experience as being someone's proximity to a social issue. That's maybe, yeah, through living really close to it or living through it in some kind of way. But that it gives you a deep understanding of what that issue looks like in its reality, how it feels, you know. And we believe that often it's that proximity and that experience of living closely with an issue that allows you to see some of the solutions to it, because you know the reality, right? And yeah, so I guess that would be, in the simplest form, my definition of lived experience.
Thanks, Eli. No, that's really helpful. And I think you're right. There have been some brilliant recent studies that come out. I know that Baljeet Sandhu has written a really valuable report that's come out. I think actually it's from 2017, but that's all around kind of the value of lived experience and social change. And I know Lucy Caldicott has also written a report about where power lies, and that's with a focus on lived experience within voluntary sector governance and decision making. So just as a resources for people to potentially look at to kind of build that understanding and knowledge, because I thought what you've said is a really helpful overview, but if people want to do a bit more of a deep dive, they can go into that. So and I think when we've spoken about this in the past as well, it's thinking about how we think about lived experience in regards to boards and could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. I think it kind of, we can circle back to what I was sharing about 10 years time and a lot of our work. I guess it feels like the golden thread that ties things together, that it is about reducing that social distance. Mm-hmm. And funders often sit very far from the communities they exist to serve. And therefore, there's often what I see is like an incompatibility in terms of understanding what is really needed, because they are so distant. And we really think that when it comes to boards, it's so important that they're reflective of the communities that the organization exists to serve. So with that lived experience and deep understanding of the communities that they're seeking to resource change in, comes a level of insight and empathy and just, I know I've said it, but deep understanding. And I think that understanding is so important, because it translates into the way that you engage with a community. How do you communicate what you're doing? How do you involve a community from the beginning in the work rather than as an afterthought? The sector talks a lot about co-production, but I think authentic, genuine, real co-production is something that we seldom see. So I think once you have that representation and that the expertise and the insight represented on your board, it's a much easier process. And I think it probably comes quite naturally from what I've seen. When boards reflect the communities, there's less of a conversation about this needs to be co-produced, because that's the way they think from the get-go. I think it just really brings so much richness to discussions and also to the solutions and outcomes.
Fantastic. No, that's brilliant. And I guess it's thinking about, if you're bringing that expertise on, then how do you support and safeguard and
exactly
those individuals to make sure that that's a, you know, that people are sharing what they want to share and it's in a comfortable and safe space, which I know that you've touched upon before as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. Okay. And so regarding mixed expertise, I think there are two areas that we specifically wanted to touch on today, because obviously mixed expertise is a huge area that we could delve very broadly across. But I think we specifically wanted to talk about class and race, which are of particular interest to you. And so what are some of the nuances here that you want to unpick?
Yeah. Oof, where do we start? I guess I'll start with class. And I think that's an area that we're really passionate about talking to. Mm-hmm. We don't pretend to have all the answers. I think class in the UK is, as probably everywhere, is a tricky one. It's a sticky issue. And it's often kind of, it's not static as well. It can move and it can be situational. And it's ever changing. But I think we use class as kind of almost like an umbrella term that's probably not the right way to say it, but I guess as a means of engaging with people that we feel are missed from boards. And within kind of saying in our promotion of our programs that we're seeking to support working class communities with expertise and proximity to the communities that some of these organizations are working with, that it starts to bring out a lot of other people that have been left out of boards for a long time. So within that, we see a real interest from communities of color coming through, people that have experiences of disabilities, and so on and so forth. And particularly, I know I've mentioned to you as a very proud Northerner, if you can't tell, that it really helps us to engage with talent outside of London as well. Yeah. So I think going back to kind of the issue of class, it's a bit of a tricky one on boards, and we're trying to talk about it a little bit more, because when it comes to representation, and as I'll talk with race a little bit, there's this urge to bring in people that look a certain way, but that don't, but that also fit into the dominant culture on a board. So it's more about a diversity of face rather than thought. I think that's a clumsy way of me putting it, but I think it's a way of, people sustaining the status quo, maybe not even aware of it, but the whole point of bringing in diverse voices is to bring in a diversity of opinions. So yes, I think it's really important to question these things. Where did people go to schools? Not saying you can't go to an elite kind of university and still be really valuable on the board. Of course you can, but it's about how do we ensure that you're there and someone else can be there that hasn't had that experience, that is equally as valuable, slash if not more valuable, to the conversation that needs to be at board level. I guess that's some of the way that we engage with class. And then kind of race, that's a big one. But I guess similarly, the whole tokenism thing, people really feel it, particularly after last summer. The sector's gone a bit nuts with its kind of obsession with diversity, but less of a reflection of why they haven't had diverse faces and people of color on their boards beforehand. And as we've spoken about before, I think that conversation is really important and needs to be kind of externally facilitated if needs be, but is a prerequisite to bringing on people of color to your board, so you don't bring them into environments that are harmful and that don't understand the barriers that had been there in their own minds. I think race is a really important issue on boards, but like I say, there needs to be that groundwork needs to be done before people start to recruit with a particular lens on racial diversity. But I think there's also something really important that it's like, what kind of person are you looking for on your board? It's not just about your race or ethnicity. Yes. It's about your proximity to the communities. What skills do you have? What understanding do you have? What alignment do you have with the mission of an organization? And I think sometimes those bits get missed in the conversation. So we're really passionate about kind of pressing pause when funders come to us or people want to check in about their recruitment processes and just ask them some questions to get them thinking a little bit more before they jump to bringing people on.
Definitely. No, I think that's incredibly helpful. Thank you so much, Eli. And I think, it is about boards being really honest about where they are and kind of why they're there and having those conversations and those reflections. And then when you are bringing people on, saying, this is the journey we've been on to date, these are our aspirations for this reason, so that people can come along the journey with you rather than being helicoptered in.
Yeah. And I think you said about the honesty, that's just so important. And if you read the Missed Expertise report, we talk about that a lot, because people they know what the deal is when they come to a board. They might not know at the beginning, but they'll find out. And then, that's partially some of the reasons why we have such high bounce rates of first-time trustees, and particularly first-time trustees from backgrounds of color, communities of color. You want to do the job well. So do the thinking before you engage.
No, that's brilliant. Thanks, Eli. And I think that also translates to the conversation about lived experience as well, doesn't it? In that same kind of thoughtfulness, that journey that organisations are on, are they really ready to support somebody who maybe has some experience that that is difficult and they might not want to talk about. So yeah, it's again being really thoughtful about that and the process that you're going to take somebody through as well. Fantastic. So really, really simple question for you now, Eli. Thinking practically, what can boards do to remove these barriers?
Maybe if it's okay, I'll go back to the barriers that are shared.
And we can that's brilliant.
How do we remove those? Because I think there's some simple ones. So I talked about the kind of the physical space that the board meetings take place. So I guess really easy, get rid of the table or move to another space that feels more accommodating, more comfortable for everybody. I've had some really great conversations with a funder that we've worked closely with, and they moved their board meetings to a separate office space where there were like beanbags on the floor and stuff. And they just said straight away the energy in the room changed. It felt way more informal. People talked more, people were less guarded. There was a flowing of conversation that was different from in previous times, and just really created a lot of space for like informal chit chat as well, which is really important in terms of building relationships and confidence at the board table, particularly for first time trustees. I guess changing the space, also ensuring that it is accessible to people that may have disabilities or access issues. Really simple stuff, but you won't believe how often it's just not done. And I think I talk about that in the report as well, through the interviews that I've had with first-time trustees, that there were just so many really basic issues that hadn't been thought about.
With that, Eli, as well, do you think it's the chair's role to talk to people individually about how they feel about the space and how, because I guess with some organisations, there'll be practicalities, there will be, there might be their only space might be a church basement, and actually, that's where they need to meet. So maybe thinking about what other things they can do to make it comfortable for people, to make it accessible, all of those, the remote access that people have had as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think the chair, as kind of bottom line, should be having regular one-to-one check-ins with each trustee to build that relationship, but also to create space so people can contribute to the conversations outside of the boardroom too, if they don't feel comfortable, or if, like me, someone might be someone that takes a little bit more time to process information, and then on the train ride home is like, I've thought of X, Y, and Z. I think that should still be counted in the conversation, and people's voices still need to be heard. And also creating that space, like you said, to check in about how accessible it is. How are you feeling about the board? Are you feeling like you're being listened to? I think it's so important to have that kind of space for bi-directional feedback and conversations. But I think kind of before that, there should be a conversation with whoever's leading the recruitment about what you need. And we really advise people to do kind of informal open days where people get a taste of what it's like to sit on the board. And if you can do that in the room where it takes place, even better, just to give people as much as as good as an understanding of what the role really entails and what it feels like as well, before you make a commitment to, I know I keep coming back to this, but working for free. I think you're giving a lot as a trustee. Yeah. It's important that it feels right. And maybe the first opportunity you have to be a trustee isn't a fit, but you know, it's important to kind of test drive it a little bit.
Definitely. And yeah, you're right. It's a role that people do for free. You want people to be able to get as much from that as they give to it as well. So you do need to have that two-way dialogue. And I think the point you touched upon as well, with those conversations with the chair and people actually processing information post meetings, you've got to think about, if we're thinking about diversity of thought, it's also neurodiversity and how people access information. 100%. But it's a whole other conversation, Eli, so I won't divert you any further. Sorry, you were yeah, exactly.
I think there's one more from my kind of three that I shared earlier, and that was around finances and kind of really clear, transparent expense processes that are upfront. Everybody knows what the deal is and everybody has to submit. I think it's really important that all or ensure that people aren't out of pocket when they're engaging with board matters. And that, and it doesn't matter if you are really wealthy and retired or whatever, I think it's a principle that needs to be followed so that other people don't feel like the odd one out when they're doing this. And I think also it's just good practice to pay people for their time as much as you can, and ensure that you're not out of pocket. I think that also extends, I think I mentioned briefly, like the time element of boards as well. And yes. I think there needs to be real transparency around what's expected from you as a trustee, so you can plan in advance, you know, and manage your time. And I guess that's so important, particularly for people that may have additional caring responsibilities or work full time, that you know when you're going to receive board papers and you know when you need to have read them by, so you can plan accordingly. And I've heard so many horror stories of board papers being sent the night before, and it's like 70 pages that someone has to get through, and, you know, just doesn't need to happen like that. So I think it sounds really simple, but like I said, you'd be surprised how many boards don't do this, and leave ample time. It's better if everybody's been able to at least read most of a set of board papers. So yeah, I think those are some of the barriers that can be removed quite easily, that will just allow for a much more level playing field from people, from which people can engage with, and really helps to, I guess, address that feeling of othering and create space for first-time trustees to feel comfortable in their role.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you, Eli. And I think when we spoke before, and obviously we can't cover everything, all of the areas here, but I think another area is around disability and reasonable adjustments. And really, you know, we're talking about meeting people where they are, having that conversation up front about, you know, accessibility, making sure the recruitment packs are accessible, making sure people need things in different formats. It's just having those conversations, isn't it? And being open to those conversations from the off with anyone, whatever their circumstances are.
I think just on that, there was a huge one that I missed off, but inductions, that so many boards don't have kind of robust, comprehensive inductions where people get to, I guess, get a 360 view of what their responsibilities are in the role, what support is available to them, particularly around personal development. We believe that's really important to run alongside a role like this. And really a focus on like jargon busting, providing people with a glossary of terms. There's so many acronyms that are used that are often specific to an organization. So, you know, really kind of debunking those ways that often serve to exclude people from conversations, I think is just so important and doesn't take place enough on boards.
And a simple fix as well, to say this is exactly what this means, or genuinely walking people through those finances so that as your fiduciary responsibility, you need to know what that looks like. And for lots of people, I think that's one of the big barriers for boards, because it's just an area that most people, if it's not your day to day, how often are you reading management accounts?
Exactly. Like,
not very often. So yeah, having that transparency.
Definitely.
Fantastic. So is there anything else, do you think, that we want to kind of wrap up with in ways that some helpful ways boards can accommodate different expertise and insights?
Ooh, I think we've probably covered it, but I guess just to kind of summarize and tie things together, listening. I think it's so important to listen to your trustees, create space for listening. That's how we learn. That's how we connect. And I think it's so simple, but it's often not prioritized. So I think, you know, yes, do it in the board meetings, ensure that you connect on a kind of one-to-one level with each trustees as the chair, but kind of away from the board's kind of core work, make spaces for social kind of occasions, or maybe like a little retreat somewhere for a few days, so people can connect and learn about each other. Because for me, it's more about you bring yourself to the board table as a person, and it's that kind of personal experience, your ability to connect with others, to understand, that really makes you a really great trustee. So just creating more space for that connection and to listen and learn about each other, I think will only make a board stronger.
Fantastic. Thanks, Elan. I think the only thing I would say, maybe from a recruitment perspective as well, is just being really clear about what you're looking for upfront. So you're not asking for anything that you don't need. So do you need board experience? We're thinking here about first-time trustees. If you put it on there, even if you say desirable, it still creates a potential barrier for people thinking, well, there are going to be people that apply that have that experience.
100%. Yeah, I've seen things like stating that you need to have a master's degree. And I just, why do you need a master's degree to do that?
Yeah, even on a job description, it feels like that's a conversation that we're having about not needing that for a trustee role. But yeah, that feels like an interesting barrier. But Eli, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you about this as ever. So thank you so much for really generously giving up your time. And look forward to continuing the conversation as well. So thank you.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thank you for having me.
Have a good afternoon. Bye for now.
Yes, bye-bye.